A Story Publishing presents Co-Creating the Future. Imagine yourself seated at a crossroads, a juncture where the old world of rigid hierarchies gently yields to a new era of empowered participation. In our discussion, we explore Dynamic Shared Ownership, or DSO for short, a management philosophy that distributes decision-making authority to the edges and transforms every job into a stake in the enterprise. Instead of confining power behind closed doors, DSO invites each individual to become a co-creator of value, pairing responsibility with genuine authority so employees can see the tangible impact of their efforts. At its heart, dynamic shared ownership is about rebalancing responsibility and authority. Picture an orchestra where every musician not only plays their part, but also helps shape the performance. There's no distant director barking orders. Each player listens, adapts, and contributes to the harmony of the whole. In organizations that embrace DSO, the traditional top-down command model gives way to a structure where decision rights are broadly shared, ensuring that those closest to the work can respond swiftly and meaningfully. The intellectual lineage of DSO stretches back more than a century. Mary Parker Follett, in the early 20th century, offered a radical alternative to power over management. She championed power with, the idea that real influence emerges when people share authority toward a common goal. 2 decades later, the Scanlon Plan pioneered experiments in gain sharing, linking rewards to collective productivity, and planting the seeds for a paradigm that would evolve through lean manufacturing, agile methodologies, and beyond. Why does DSO matter now? The pace of technological innovation, the complexity of global markets, and the accelerating cycle of products have far outstripped the capacity of any central few to anticipate every challenge. At the same time, workers are seeking more than just a paycheck. They crave meaning, autonomy, and a voice in decisions that affect their daily lives. By granting autonomy to teams closer to the work, organizations can unlock faster innovation, greater adaptability, and a deeper sense of engagement among employees. To bring these ideas to life, we will follow 2 compelling case studies. First, we return to Zeeland, Michigan, where Herman Miller's covenantal culture took root in a factory floor alive with artisans and designers. There, the legacy of the Scanlon Plan intertwined with a human-centered design ethos, giving rise to iconic creations like the Eames lounge chair, and a spirit of shared ownership that sustained the company through decades of change. Next, we fast forward to 2023, where Bayer's newly appointed CEO has declared bureaucracy the enemy, rolling out self-managed teams across crop science, pharma, consumer health, and enabling functions. In 90-day cycles, squads set outcome-based OKRs, allocate resources horizontally, and test an agile model on a scale of more than 100,000 employees. Throughout our journey, we will ask critical questions. Why are decisions best made closer to the heart of the action? How can organizations harness the unique perspectives of every employee to spark innovation and drive efficiency? And what lessons emerge when companies dare to reimagine the social contract of work? By examining these questions through theory, history, and real-world practice, you'll gain insights that apply whether you lead a startup or navigate life in an enterprise-level bureaucracy. As you listen, reflect on your own workplace experiences. Think back to a time when you felt most empowered to contribute, when your insights reshaped a project, or when collaboration led to a breakthrough. Contrast that with moments when hierarchy stifled potential or slowed decision-making. These personal touchpoints mirror the broader narrative of dynamic shared ownership, reminding us that the success of any model hinges on the human spirit of creativity, trust, and mutual accountability. In the chapters ahead, you'll encounter a tapestry of voices, from the craftsmen who built furniture that changed design history to the internal practitioners coaching squads in a global pharmaceutical giant. Their stories are not just chronicles of corporate transformation. They are testaments to what is possible when individuals are entrusted with genuine ownership over their work. You'll hear about triumphs, faster regulatory filings, product pilots that scale across continents, and about tensions, from clashing performance metrics to the challenge of aligning incentives across diverse cultures. It's important to remember that dynamic shared ownership is not a magic bullet. It carries a higher cognitive load, demands clear decision rights, and risks becoming mere symbolism if unbacked by structural change. Yet, when thoughtfully applied, it becomes a framework for unlocking latent potential, forging a resilient and innovative organization capable of thriving amid uncertainty. So let us now step forward into the realm of dynamic shared ownership. We begin by revisiting the roots of management thinking, tracing the arc from early experiments in gain sharing to today's dynamic, distributed models of leadership. As we weave together history, theory, and practice, you'll be equipped with not only an understanding of DSO's evolution, but with actionable insights to carry back to your own organization. Welcome to a journey that champions collaboration, shared responsibility, and the power of every individual to shape the future of work. In the heart of Zeeland, Michigan, amid the steady hum of machinery and the careful rhythm of handcrafted precision, Herman Miller's heritage was more than a chapter in business history. It was a living covenant. On the factory floor of the mid-20th century, artisans and designers labored side by side, united by a shared sense of purpose, not merely to produce furniture, but to create objects of timeless design. Here, every wood shaper and upholstery technician became a guardian of a legacy founded on collaboration, creativity, and an unwavering commitment to quality. At Herman Miller, shared ownership transcended the financial. It was a covenant between employer and employee, a mutual promise to innovate with care and conscience. The Scanlon Plan, which tied wages to collective productivity, became the beating heart of that culture. By aligning incentives with a broader mission, it fostered a sense of belonging and responsibility that foreshadowed the principles of dynamic shared ownership. In those formative years, every decision, whether on the shop floor or in a hushed office corridor, was imbued with the weight of preserving tradition, even as the company dared to imagine a more inclusive future. Against this richly storied backdrop, Brian Walker emerged in 2004 as both steward of tradition and architect of transformation. Confronted by currency swings, margin pressure, and a rapidly diversifying market, his mandate was clear yet challenging: to guide Herman Miller through a decade-long shift that would fuse lean manufacturing principles inspired by Toyota with the human-centered design ethos that had always defined the company. Walker understood that true change could be achieved only by honoring core values, trust, respect, and shared commitment, while driving the efficiency and innovation demanded by a new era. On the factory floor, teams began to move beyond compartmentalized roles, embracing a model in which every employee had a voice in shaping both product and process. The familiar act of making a chair or assembling a desk was reimagined as a collective endeavor, one in which decision rights shifted closer to the work itself. Yet, this transformation carried its own tensions. Herman Miller was revered not only for its cutting-edge designs, but for its soulful culture, an asset many feared could be diluted if the quest for growth eclipsed the human element. Longtime veterans remembered when decision-making felt like a communal ritual, a careful dance of perspectives. They worried that new pressures might force a return to top-down directives. Walker's answer was not to discard the past, but to reinterpret it for a changing world, demonstrating that scale and soul need not be mutually exclusive. Workshops and design studios soon echoed with a different cast of conversations. Cross-functional cells gathered around tack time charts alongside engineers, and the language of work shifted to honor narrative as much as efficiency. Every process improvement carried a story: the origin of an innovation, the perspective of a team member, the incremental step toward perfection. It was a renaissance driven by the belief that productivity and creativity flourish when people are trusted to experiment. At the core of this shift lay an unwavering belief in shared destiny. Decentralizing decision-making wasn't a mere operational tweak. It was a radical reimagining of teamwork, built on the premise that those closest to the work are best positioned to improve it. Walker's initiatives, from redesigning workspaces to encourage spontaneous collaboration to embedding lean principles deep into daily routines, all flowed from the conviction that empowerment and accountability must go hand in hand. As the shift took shape, challenges inevitably surfaced. Some seasoned craftspeople worried that the push for innovation risked sidelining the wisdom born of experience, while newer hires grappled with the ambiguity of roles in an organization that prized initiative over hierarchy. Rather than seeing these strains as failures, Walker treated them as vital feedback, signals that the model needed fine-tuning to maintain the delicate balance between continuity and change. One telling moment occurred when a veteran craftsman, whose hands had shaped furniture that graced iconic homes, found himself deep in conversation with a young designer about the subtleties of ergonomics and aesthetic harmony. In their exchange, the past and future converged, a reminder that progress is most meaningful when it builds on the insights of what has come before. Before long, the broader business community took notice. Herman Miller was demonstrating that it could preserve its artisanal soul even as it led in modern operational practices. Performance benchmarks improved, process lead times shrank, and perhaps most importantly, employees spoke again of purpose, of seeing their work as contributions to a larger narrative rather than tasks on an assembly line. The tension between honoring timeless values and embracing new imperatives remained, but it proved to be the very source of the company's dynamic energy. Growth, when pursued with intention and respect for core principles, need not erode identity. It can amplify it. Under Walker's leadership, a blend of attentive listening and decisive action, Herman Miller navigated turbulent markets without losing the artistic spirit that had inspired icons like the Eames lounge chair. As we arrive at this juncture in the story, the question before us is clear. How does an organization preserve its soul while pursuing bold new horizons? Herman Miller's decade-long journey under Brian Walker offers a compelling answer, that genuine transformation honors the past even as it forges the future. In the chapters ahead, we will explore the practical mechanisms that turn these covenantal ideals into measurable outcomes, illuminating how shared ownership can become a living, breathing reality in any enterprise. As the shift unfolded, transformation moved beyond grand proclamations into the realm of day-to-day practice. Herman Miller's new operating rhythm took shape in the Herman Miller Production System, or HMPS, a tangible collection of processes, tools, and cultural resets that reimagined how work got done. Rather than confining decisions to distant managers, HMPS gave rise to small, cross-functional cells of designers, engineers, craftsmen, and junior staff, who now gathered around tables once occupied by factory supervisors. Visual tools like takt time charts, long relegated to production metrics, became shared guides, pacing each cell's work and ensuring every contribution was both visible and valued. A signature illustration of this approach was the Mira 2 Pierre cycle, named to evoke its iterative rhythm and creative flair. Designers and operators sat side by side in rapid loops of experimentation and feedback. Each cycle birthed ideas, tested them against ergonomic and aesthetic criteria, and refined them until the result honored both function and form. Waste was squeezed from the process, finishing improved, and the company's commitment to quality continually reaffirmed. In these exchanges, data and intuition danced together. Numerical targets sharpened precision, while hands-on craftsmanship kept the design soulful. Integral to sustaining HMPS was a renewed emphasis on storytelling. Every cell needed to stay connected to Herman Miller's heritage, not as a museum relic, but as living inspiration. So water carriers, storytellers roaming factory floors and executive corridors, recounted the origins of iconic pieces, reminded new employees of time-honored practices, and celebrated moments of innovation spanning decades. Far from decorative, these narratives bound the mechanical and cultural dimensions of change, helping every team member see progress as part of an ongoing saga of creation and reinvention. Yet, beneath the bustle of workshops and chart-filled war rooms, tensions quietly surfaced. Veteran artisans, steeped in ritual and intuition, sometimes bristled at the influx of new metrics and methodologies. Their seasoned sense, honed over years of handcrafting, clashed with the data-driven imperatives of HMPS. In one late afternoon workshop, a fabricator who had shaped furniture for generations exchanged heated words with a young designer advocating digital tools and speed-enhancing practices. The craftsman insisted some nuances required human touch. The engineer argued that only hard numbers could drive efficiency. Rather than allowing this conflict to fracture the process, leaders treated it as a lesson. Blending traditional craftsmanship with modern analytics demanded not dominance of one over the other, but a redefined common language built on mutual respect. A second fault line emerged around performance metrics. The push for accelerated production and shorter lead times collided with the imperative to preserve artisanal quality, an element that resisted simple quantification. Financial analysts and production managers squared off over how to integrate soft metrics, collaborative interactions, narrative resonance, into a system built on throughput numbers. Storytelling again proved vital. Anecdotes of process breakthroughs and team triumphs began to sit alongside yield rates and cycle time statistics, offering a richer, more nuanced picture of success. Across these dynamic spaces, cross-functional teams became the crucible of change. Decisions were no longer handed down. They emerged from layered scrutiny across disciplines. While this sometimes slowed short-term choices, it yielded deeper, longer-lasting outcomes. Every Mira2 loop, every heated debate, and every shared story wove more wisdom into the fabric of the organization, reinforcing its ability to innovate quickly without forsaking core standards of form and function. At the heart of HMPS was the recognition that empowerment isn't a one-time transfer of authority, but an ongoing process of nurturing and coaching. Brian Walker and other leaders didn't steer from an ivory tower. They immersed themselves in the team's learning curves, listening to frustrations, clarifying decision rights, and rebalancing when conflicts arose. They understood that authority must be earned through trust and continuous reflection as much as granted by decree. Indeed, the Mira2 Pierre cycle served as a microcosm of the larger transformation. Every friction point became a data point, every stumble an invitation to refine processes, and every success story a beacon for other cells facing similar challenges. When one team managed to shave days off production without compromising finish quality, their story spread rapidly, fueling momentum and creating new champions of the HMPS philosophy. Over time, the frictions that once felt like roadblocks instead surfaced the gaps in communication and policy. They prompted updates to teaming structures, revisions to performance dashboards, and clarifications of roles. In confronting these challenges head-on, Herman Miller's leaders demonstrated that modernization need not erase the old ways, but rather integrate them into a stronger, more adaptable system. Viewed in hindsight, the mechanics of the shift, the HMPS framework, the disciplined formation of cross-functional cells, the iterative Mira2 loops, and the ever-present commitment to storytelling revealed change as both art and science. These processes served as scaffolding for a cultural metamorphosis, redefining authority as an emergent quality, intertwining quantifiable gains with the power of shared narratives, and recasting the workplace as a stage where every participant had a vital role. As we step back from these detailed practices, it becomes clear that Herman Miller's shift was neither swift nor seamless. It was a continuous balancing act, honoring tradition while embracing modern imperatives, merging structured systems with the unpredictable pulse of human ingenuity. Their journey offers a compelling lesson that true innovation grows from the stories we share, the trust we foster, and the willingness to evolve in the face of both promise and resistance. As the hum of transformation spread beyond the factory floors of Zealand, Herman Miller entered a new phase, one that would stretch its covenantal culture across continents and disciplines. Acquisitions were not mere exercises in market expansion, but deliberate extensions of dynamic shared ownership, each bringing fresh challenges and opportunities to weave distinctive strengths into a shared narrative. Posh in Hong Kong, Maharam in Connecticut, and Design Within Reach in San Francisco arrive not simply as assets to be managed, but as partners in a collective reinvention. In Hong Kong, the return of Posh carried profound symbolism. After a temporary shutdown, employees were welcomed back on a literal red carpet, a gesture that transcended mere ceremony. It signaled that every individual, regardless of locale or language, mattered in the unfolding Herman Miller story. Leadership paired this visual welcome with listening sessions, storytelling circles, and integration workshops, emphasizing that translating ownership into action meant honoring local customs, even as teams embraced the principles that had long defined the brand. Connecticut's Maharam brought its own textures of complexity. Renowned for its aesthetic brilliance and artisanal precision, Maharam demanded a fusion of creative narrative and manufacturing discipline. Traditional incentive structures proved too blunt to capture the subtleties of design innovation, so leaders adopted a dual approach. They tracked quantitative improvements alongside qualitative measures of creative impact. Workshops became forums where designers and production specialists debated how a pattern's emotional resonance could coexist with streamlined processes, forging a shared language that valued both inspiration and efficiency. On the West Coast, Design Within Reach injected a rapid retail tempo that contrasted with Herman Miller's measured manufacturing beat. To bridge this gap, leadership unveiled a collaborative digital mural in San Francisco, half classic design sketch, half contemporary motif, to celebrate the merge of enduring principles and vibrant, market-driven insights. Bonus plans were retuned, decision rights clarified, and cross-functional roles redesigned so that retail teams could move swiftly while remaining anchored in the enterprise's deeper vision of co-creation. Yet integration surfaced tensions as readily as synergies. Boardrooms witnessed earnest debates over how to harmonize disparate performance metrics, while break rooms echoed with spirited exchanges between veteran artisans and data-minded strategists. In one notable instance, a long-tenured craftsman and a young analyst argued the merits of intuition versus analytics, a clash that risked division but ultimately revealed a richer path forward, one where qualitative wisdom and hard data informed each other. These moments of friction became crucibles for synthesis, not breakdowns to be concealed. Throughout this delicate dance, leaders did more than decree new policies. They facilitated dialogue. Town halls and cross-departmental story swaps reminded every team member of Herman Miller's founding legends, illustrating how past breakthroughs can guide future experiments. Integration leads prioritized transparent communication, treating each question or concern as an opportunity to reinforce the shared purpose, binding legacy, and newcomer alike. Institutional changes soon followed. Incentive structures were overhauled to reward not only throughput and cost savings, but mentoring, cross-team collaboration, and the courage to propose unconventional ideas. The vocabulary of hierarchy gave way to terms like co-creation and collective wisdom, a subtle but powerful shift that signaled every person's role as both contributor and steward of a living legacy. For leaders navigating similar transformations, these acquisitions offer clear lessons. Symbolic welcomes, whether red carpets or collaborative murals, build the emotional bridges that metrics alone cannot. Early cultural integration through storytelling and dialogue lays the groundwork for smoother operational alignment. And when tensions arise, treating them as data points rather than failures fosters a continual process of refinement. As the dust of initial integration settled, a shared sentiment took hold. The true measure of success lay not in uniform procedures, but in a dynamic, ongoing conversation between past and future. Veterans found their voices amplified in discussions of next-generation innovation. Newcomers infused time-honored practices with fresh energy. This interplay of old and new revealed that dynamic shared ownership is not a static milestone, but a living commitment to learn, adapt, and co-author the organization's evolving story. As we turn the page to 2023, imagine a vast enterprise recalibrating its internal engine, a company where decision-making is no longer the exclusive preserve of entrenched hierarchies, but a shared responsibility woven into the very fabric of daily work. In this new chapter, Bayer emerges as a striking counterpoint to Herman Miller's century-long evolution. Under the bold stewardship of CEO Bill Anderson, the organization set out to dismantle the cumbersome bureaucracy of the old order, championing a dynamic model of shared ownership that marries modern agility with a deep-rooted commitment to purpose. Bill Anderson's vision was as clear as it was daring. Confronted by the challenges of a global, data-driven world, he declared bureaucracy the enemy, the chain that binds creativity and slows the pace of innovation. His solution was more than a reshuffle of titles or reporting lines. It was a fundamental re-engineering of roles, expectations, and outcomes built squarely on the principles of dynamic shared ownership. At the heart of Bayer's transformation lies the VAX model: visionary, architect, catalyst, coach, four roles designed to replace command and control with inspiration, structure, momentum, and support. The visionary sets the course with clarity and ambition. The architect builds pathways that endure and evolve. The catalyst ignites initiative, enabling teams to seize opportunities. And the coach nurtures talent, fostering continuous learning and shared success. These roles are not confined to the executive suite, but live on factory floors, in research labs, and across sprawling digital platforms. A network of roughly 200 internal practitioners, from crop science to consumer health and enabling functions, travels the globe, teaching squads how to plan and deliver work in 90-day cycles. They guide teams in setting outcome-based objectives and key results okay, and ensure resources flow horizontally rather than being hoarded in silos. The 90-day cadence, both fleeting and crucial, forces teams to focus on rapid iteration and accountability. Each quarter, a squad defines its ambitions, tests its strategies, and reflects on its outcomes. This rhythm stands in stark contrast to the drawn-out annual planning cycles of the past, imbuing daily activities with urgency and clarity. In this environment, every decision becomes a commitment and every action a statement of ownership. Early wins at Bayer quickly became proof points. In one instance, a regulatory filing, a process traditionally painstaking and protracted, was completed 3 weeks faster than before. That modest improvement carried profound implications. By vesting decision rights in those who understand the nuances of the work, bureaucracy was not only reduced, but replaced by a fluid mechanism of rapid response and continuous improvement. Elsewhere, a small crop protection pilot, launched in one region, scaled in months to operations spanning four continents. This global ripple reflected both the ingenuity of ground-level teams and the agile reallocation of resources the VAC model enabled. These tangible successes fueled further enthusiasm, reminding every employee that when empowered with the right tools and authority, remarkable feats can be achieved. Of course, rewiring a company of more than 100,000 people presents monumental challenges. It demands new governance structures, performance metrics, and above all, a cultural shift that touches every corner of the organization. Early experiments in dynamic management revealed subtle tensions around decision rights. Middle managers, once gatekeepers of information and budgets, had to redefine themselves as mentors and facilitators, guiding teams through goals and metrics while balancing autonomy with accountability. This role requires humility, empathy, and a willingness to let go of the reins so others can steer. Operational discipline also needed recalibration. In pharmaceuticals and consumer health, where timely decisions can mean the difference between success and setback, the 90-day sprint is not just expedient, it is a crucible for excellence. Teams meet regularly, harnessing real-time data and collective insight to refine their strategies. By reimagining performance metrics to reflect both tangible outcomes and qualitative milestones, Bayer cultivates an environment where progress shows up not only in spreadsheets, but in shared narratives of breakthrough and teamwork. Perhaps most striking is the human element, the intrinsic drive of individuals who see their contributions reflected in the organization's achievements. As dynamic shared ownership takes root, conversations shift from what's the boss's decision to what can we make happen together. This cultural metamorphosis is the most significant indicator of success, for the spirit of ownership, once ignited, fuels an enduring journey of innovation and collaboration. The most vivid embodiment of this shift is found not in improved metrics alone, but in how leaders and employees now engage. Team meetings that were once formal status updates have become vibrant exchanges of ideas, experiments, and back-and-forth refinements fueled by a shared mission. The language of command has given way to collaboration, a lexicon where idea, experiment, and iteration resonate with the certainty that every individual insight enriches the collective endeavor. While Bayer's journey under the VAC model is still unfolding, its early chapters offer a powerful narrative for any organization wrestling with large-scale transformation. These experiments teach us that reform is not a single event, but an evolving process. One requiring persistence, a willingness to embrace discomfort, and a celebration of each small victory. Bill Anderson's rallying cry that bureaucracy is the enemy reverberates through the corridors of the sprawling enterprise, reminding every team member to stay agile and responsive. In these formative moments, marked by breakthroughs measured not only by shortened cycle times, but by the renewed passion of empowered employees, the promise of dynamic shared ownership is vividly alive. It reshapes not just the work at hand, but the very culture of enterprise, proving that when every decision is made closer to the heart of action, the result is a more inclusive, forward, innovative future. At Bayer, the promise of dynamic shared ownership is tangible, even as everyday reality bites. In a bustling crop science office one morning, finance lead Marta finds herself wrestling with capital requests that have piled up during a 90-day sprint. "I've always known budgeting as an annual ritual," she admits. "Now, every quarter feels like chasing our own tails, trying to reconcile slower finance cycles with rapid execution." Across the hall in consumer health, product owner Julian faces a tug-of-war with HR over headcount mid-sprint. "We're focused on breakthroughs, and suddenly the talk shifts to who's the boss on budgets," he reflects, capturing the dissonance between legacy structures and a flatter decision-making model that still feels foreign to many stakeholders and even some customers. Yet in other corners of Bayer's sprawling operations, this friction becomes fuel for transformation. In a German manufacturing plant, weekly Ask Me Anything sessions invite everyone, from line workers to senior directors, to pose questions directly to leadership. These gatherings are less about dispensing answers than about modeling transparency and the humility to admit uncertainty. In one session, a middle manager explained how his role had evolved from issuing directives to mentoring teams. "It's not a downgrade to become a life coach rather than a budget commander," he smiled. "It's an evolution of what leadership means." What unites these stories is the intertwining of change and continuity. For many seasoned managers, the shift challenges not only responsibilities, but identity. Whereas they once measured their day by the number of decisions signed off, they now gauge success by how effectively they empower others. "I used to count my worth in approvals," one manager confessed. "Now I'm measured by how well I help my team make decisions," learning a whole new language of leadership. Across functions, teams are inventing interim solutions to bridge old and new rhythms. A pharma analytics group piloted a peer-based reward system that balances speed-to-result metrics with qualitative feedback. By spotlighting small victories and weaving narrative alongside numbers, they created an early model for marrying agile pace with organizational rigor. These candid snapshots from Bayer's journey serve as both cautionary tales and sparks of inspiration. They remind us that sweeping change rarely follows a straight line. Each tweak to budgeting practices or middle management roles invites new debates and recalibrations. Yet amid the tensions, transformation takes root when leaders remain visible, communication stays open, and every setback is welcomed as data for the next iteration. One memorable moment came at the close of a challenging quarter when a consumer health team leader convened an impromptu workshop. Employees from research, finance, and marketing laid their frustrations, ideas, and small wins on a whiteboard. Rather than dismissing these candid admissions as complaints, senior management wove them into a refreshed charter for collaboration. That vibrant session, alive with both tension and creativity, became a blueprint for aligning rapid innovation with the clarity of shared decision rights and resource allocation. Innovation, it turns out, is far from linear. It weaves through layers of process, adapts to constant feedback, and demands both the courage to cut bureaucracy and the humility to learn from missteps. In Bayer's case, every deferred budget approval, every redefined leadership identity, and every lingering expectation that the boss must still sign off serves as a reminder that true transformation hinges on the willingness to question old certainties and forge new norms. For any leader facing a similar leap, Bayer's experience underscores three essentials: visible sponsorship from the top, transparent metrics that honor both numbers and narratives, and space for managers to reinvent themselves as coaches rather than gatekeepers. When these elements come together, dynamic shared ownership moves beyond a lofty ideal and becomes a living reality, a framework for innovation that engages every individual in shaping the organization's future. As Bayer's experiment with shared ownership continues, the journey remains unfinished but undeniably promising. Processes are refined, middle managers embrace new identities with surprising agility, and teams learn to balance the speed of modern innovation with the steadiness of established systems. In these struggles and triumphs, dynamic shared ownership is tested in its purest form, inviting us to rethink not just how work gets done, but what it means to be part of an organization in the 21st century. As our journey draws to a close, we find ourselves at a moment of reflection, a threshold where Herman Miller's century-spanning metamorphosis and Bayer's bold experiment with speed and scale converge. Both stories reveal the same truth. When every person holds a genuine stake in creation, an organization shifts from inert hierarchy to a living organism pulsing with shared purpose, mutual accountability, and responsive innovation. At Herman Miller, shared ownership grew not as a policy, but as a living tradition. Nurtured on the factory floor, where artisans and designers shaped furniture side by side. Decision rights rippled outward from boardrooms into workshops, each wood shaper speaking as author of the next design iteration and steward of the company's enduring ideals. The Scanlon Plan's gain-sharing ethos was not an isolated program, but the heartbeat of a culture that wove narrative and craft into every process improvement. Over decades, leaders honored this legacy even as they layered on lean principles and cross-functional cells, showing that efficiency and artistry need not compete but can harmonize in service of a larger vision. In contrast, Bayer's 2023 reinvention raced to dismantle bureaucracy across a global enterprise. Under the VAC-C model, visionary, architect, catalyst, coach, power moved swiftly to teams operating in 90-day sprints. Squads set outcome-based OKRs, horizontal resource allocation replaced siloed budgets, and regulatory filings once measured in months began closing weeks earlier. From a crop protection pilot scaling across continents to consumer health breakthroughs delivered with newfound agility, Bayer's story illustrates how reallocating decision rights closer to the work ignites velocity and ownership at scale. Yet in both cases, empowerment carried its own complexities. Dynamic shared ownership demands a high cognitive load. Freedom without clear boundaries can breed confusion, and the thrill of autonomy can clash with legacy systems. At Herman Miller, veteran craftspeople bristled when quantitative metrics met soulful design. At Bayer, middle managers wrestled with shifting from gatekeepers of budgets to mentors of teams. Each tension, whether over performance dashboards or headcount approvals, revealed not failure, but data for recalibration, underscoring that friction is the anvil on which shared ownership is forged. From these intertwined experiences emerge five enduring principles. First, safeguard your core stories. Narratives bind individuals to purpose and anchor innovation in a shared heritage. Second, define decision rights with unmistakable clarity. Empowerment without scope is no empowerment at all. Third, reimagine middle management as coaches and facilitators, shifting their identity from decree makers to talent nurturers. Fourth, align budgeting rhythms with your agile cadence, ensuring that financial processes support rather than stifle rapid iteration. Fifth, measure success through both numbers and narratives. Track throughput alongside the human stories that reveal what really energizes people and markets. Even as these principles light the path forward, it is vital to acknowledge the limits of any transformative model. Dynamic shared ownership is not a one-off initiative or a symbolic gesture that can be checked off a to-do list. It demands relentless effort. Visible leadership sponsorship, transparent progress audits, and a willingness to iterate policies with the same zeal applied to products. The tension between structure and spontaneity, between honoring tradition and embracing the new, is not a flaw, but a feature, a fertile ground where resilience and creativity bloom. Looking ahead, the workspace will evolve yet again. Digitized supply chains, remote collaboration, and global market shifts will test our capacity to adapt. In this landscape, the playbook offered by Herman Miller and Bayer becomes a guide to resilience. Model the behaviors you seek, audit progress openly, and iterate decision frameworks as swiftly as you refine your offerings. When every employee is both custodian of legacy and architect of the future, an organization gains the capacity to thrive amid uncertainty and to seize opportunities before they slip away. As you consider these insights, think back to moments when you felt most engaged in your own work, the projects where your voice reshaped outcomes or where collaboration sparked breakthroughs. Let those experiences light the way as you introduce dynamic shared ownership into your own team or enterprise. The journey will neither be short nor easy, but it promises a richer tapestry of creativity, accountability, and shared triumph. Step confidently into this realm of co-creation, carry forward the dialogue with clarity and courage, and together write the next chapter of your organization's evolving story. Thank you for choosing Astori Publishing.